Mr. Griffin?
Okay, this is the hearing on the proposed...
You can sit down and be quiet. That'd be cool with me. Thank you.
This is the hearing on the proposed open space ordinance. If you're here for that, I know many of you were seated in the back. Work your way down toward the front. It'd be a lot easier for you to hear. Mr. Lank will give us a little overview about what happened when this ordinance was considered by the commission, and then we will certainly allow an opportunity today for public input on this. Mr. Lank?
Yes, thank you. This is an ordinance to amend chapters 99 and 115 of the Code of Sussex County to define open space and to incorporate open space requirements into the application and approval process in all residential zoning districts and in residential planned communities, and to clarify provisions relating to resubdivision, permitted uses, bonds, site plans, and other approval criteria. On November 13th of 2008, the Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this ordinance amendment. The ordinance amendments were summarized. The commission was provided with copies of letters received in reference to this ordinance amendment from Leanne Walling, Chief of Planning for the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, Gary T. Couples, President of ECI LLC, Environmental Consultants International LLC, Mark H. Davidson of DC Group LLC, Being Design Consultants Group LLC, and Deborah Schultz of Lewis. These letters were a part of the record and remain a part of the record. In the discussion of the ordinance, Mr. Burton stated the County Council should consider some of the Denrick comments. Mr. Robinson advised, being the assistant county attorney, advised the commission that there are some limitations as to what can be amended in the proposed ordinance, and major changes would require rewrite and re-advertisement. Mr. Smith questioned how closely this ordinance amendment follows what the commission wanted from our consultants on land use plan, URDC, and the county council. Roger Gross, professional engineer of Mearstone Consultants, was present and made comments. Carol Basin was present on behalf of the Center for the Inland Bays and gave comments and provided the commission members with a copy of the ordinance with red line or red typing showing some suggested improvements and changes into the text of the ordinance. Kevin Burdett of McCrone Incorporated was present and suggested some changes. Johnson stated that the commission appreciated the suggestions from all the speakers and the letters received. Mr. Wheatley stated that the commission could pass the ordinance amendment forward to the county council with recommendations they consider the comments received. Mr. Smith stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of ordinance amendment to amend chapter 99 and chapter 115 regarding open space based on the record and with the following specific recommendations. One, the exclusion of buffers from open space calculations in mobile home parks in section 115-172G6 should be deleted. Number two, the county council should consider changing section 99-5 and 115-4 regarding the definition of open space to allow certain types of stormwater management to be included in open space calculations such as green technologies, et cetera. And three, the county council should consider all other written recommendations considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission during the public hearing. There was a motion, a second, and carried unanimously to forward this ordinance amendment to the council with a recommendation that the ordinance amendment be approved based on the reasons and recommendations stated, and that motion carried unanimously 5-0. Attached to my report just after page, or the commission report just after page 11, is a copy of four pages provided through Leanne Walling for the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. Three pages from ECI Engineering Consultants International. Three pages from Mark Davison for DC Group. being Design Consultants Group, LLC, and then a two-page letter or comments from Deborah Schultz, who all those comments were received prior to the commission's public hearing. And then several pages, well, let me back up a little bit. First, from the Center for Inland Base, we had a cover letter provided by Carol Basin, which was one page, and then we had 7 pages of the ordinance amended in the center's version, and then attached to that was several pages relating to the roles of impervious cover on a, as a watershed-based zoning tool, which was a copy of a Maryland used to provide for a zoning tool to protect water quality in the Christiana River Basin of Delaware, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and for informational purposes. And that's probably 11 pages. Now, that was provided for the council last week so they could get a chance to review it prior to today. If you looked at the, just in general, the comments from the Center for Inland Base, it is black on white lettering, but you'll notice that there's some lettering and words that are a little bit lighter than the black print, sort of a gray. Those are the suggested amendments. For example, on page number one of the center's comments, number three, they suggested the allowable impervious cover on recreational facilities and open space shall not exceed 15% of the calculated open space area. And you can see that that's a little bit lighter in colors than the black print. Just prior to the start of the meeting today, I received, and I believe the council has copies of all these comments, we received written comments from Kevin Burdett from McCrone Incorporated, Ed and Joe Kling, residents of New Rehoboth. We received comments from Joanne Cabry of the Rehoboth address, and Valerie Claudier of also of Rehoboth area. And they are a part of the record, and the council has copies. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Jim?
We are going to call on folks from the floor who want to speak. When you do come down front to the podium, if you would state your name and your address before you make your statement, that would be very much appreciated. Who would like to lead off? Leanne, you want to get in and out of here?
She getting paid to be here. She got all day. No, I'll just get it.
We want to save the states.
I won't tell you where I am.
They will ding you.
Ask Bob Weed.
Okay. Tell you by experience.
Ooh, okay, I'll be in and out. I really don't, my letter represents comments from several scientists and engineers at DENREC, and I'm not as technical as they are, so I hope you don't ask me any really technical questions. I just wanted to make, 2 points, and I think it might, you guys, the Planning Commission may have already addressed the point, so... the one thing I just wanted to talk about was some sort of distinction between the active open space or the recreational amenities like swimming pool, which isn't really open space, by our definition of protecting natural resources, and then the actual passive open space, which would be the natural areas, excellent recharge areas, things like that. And then the second point was, it sounded like Mr. Lank that it had been addressed or was going to be addressed, was we don't want to discourage green technology stormwater practices or best management practices. So, we would suggest that a developer be given credit when utilizing green technology best management practices, and we give a specific example in the letter.
No matter if it's a dry pond or a wet one?
We're talking about things like we mentioned an example would be a meadow in an excellent recharge area that the developer wants to direct stormwater runoff towards, utilizing a level spreader, filter strips, and bioretention swales. What we talk about a lined stormwater pond would be something that we don't think should count as open space.
Let me ask you this, Leanne. Do you have a list of what green technology examples are? Because pretty soon everything will be green technology, and they're going to get credit for
Right.
A stormwater management pond, which is what we have today, but all of a sudden, if we adopt something, they'll get credit for it. That's green technology. So we need to, I think, determine what is green technology and what isn't.
Yeah, we'd be happy to provide that, but we're talking, what we don't wouldn't count would be aligned, you know, traditional stormwater management
pond. Right, but somebody needs to help us because we're not, we're like you, we're not real technical.
Okay. But that and the issue of swimming pools, you know, we would just draw
sense.
The distinction
right.
Would be all we'd ask. But we thank you for.
But green technology is that's easy, passive and active swimming pools versus your real open space. But
right.
When it gets down to green technology, mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well,
because every
yeah.
attorney, every engineer, they all have a different. They'll tell us it's green technology, and unless we have something to dispute it, we're
it's all constantly evolving, but it
I know.
Basically...
Would it give us some examples?
We will do that.
Okay. Or during
right
the
now?
No.
Okay.
Maybe no, later. Have somebody on your staff do that.
Okay.
Or possibly it could be done during the plus comments.
Okay.
So when you all are reviewing a project, you could say, that in our opinion, this is green technology.
Yeah.
You know, this aspect of this.
So we normally do that, yeah.
Huh?
We don't want Senator up there. I think we're going to keep it
no,
on.
No, they get involved in plus comments now. What are you talking about?
Well, no, but as far as the comments, as far as what we consider green technology and what.
We don't consider anything green. We don't have.
I understand.
Okay.
I'm just
okay.
saying that.
All right. Well, I'll argue that
we'll
later.
Be glad to follow up. And.
Would you, yeah, would you please have somebody provide us with what you all consider examples of green technology.
Sure. Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Oh, we got
that's
it.
A
okay.
Simple
thank
reason.
You.
She provided some of those comments, which she already stated in her second page of her comments. She referenced green technology and best management practices.
We already have that, though.
As being meadows that actually recharge, that where they can direct stormwater runoff toward level spreaders, filter strip, fire retention swales.
But when people start talking about giving the developers credit for something, it ought to be something that we're not already doing.
I agree.
Right? Okay, it ought to be something over and above. So that's what I'm trying to find, what that level is, and if somebody could help provide me that, I would like to see
green
that.
Green technology is putting a fountain in it, then they should be listed as that.
Who would like to be next?
Okay.
Mike?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Mike Tyler. I live in Lewis, and I did some boning up on a book that you may remember, Randall Arendt's Open Space Developments. I sat in on that meeting back in 93. I guess maybe Dale might have been there, and George, you were probably
there. I was
here
for
meeting.
You. I had to be there. Or his absence.
Are you kidding?
Was I
are you
that
kidding?
Day, Dale?
It was at, no, it was at right near the airport. Remember that building behind by the airport? Well, anyway, it's been a long time ago. And, you know, Randall, I think what you've done here, what you have here is a pretty decent document, but there are some things that I have some concern about. One of them, it says, ponds which have a demonstrated safe recreational value and purpose and do not allow the use of motorized watercraft. I wonder what's considered safe.
Safe?
I mean, a stormwater pond, you know, I've always been against stormwater ponds. It's,
I'm with
you know,
100%.
And I've talked to developers, and they say, yeah, we could do a bioswale or bioretention. Just we don't want to. It costs too much, and it's – but if you look at what's happening in today's best management practices, this is really the way to go because stormwater management ponds give headaches to homeowners association. They're debris collectors. They often are dry. They're positioned in the wrong place, and that's – I don't think that's acceptable.
Out front where you can't span the road.
Exactly, right.
Can't get through their head.
I think one of the tenets that you raise here, maintain land in a predominantly undeveloped or natural state, is very important. That natural aspect really adds value to development, and for the developer to have a wooded area or a natural area, I think speaks volumes to for open space, for defending open space. I wonder about spray irrigation areas. I believe they can be made safe and be usable, at least as visual amenities, and also you can use them. Also, I like the aspect of maintaining it in perpetuity. I think that's very important. Tidal wetlands presents some concerns, and I know that Randall Arendt made a comment about protecting the tidal wetlands. I don't know if I can pick it up right here. But one of the things he said was it's very important to have buffers for these tidal wetlands. And he said, although Sussex County had limitations, he felt that the experts feel that 100-foot buffer is more valuable to save open space and to save these wetlands, because wetlands are critical. He also talks about density neutral, and you probably are familiar with that. That means the overall number of dwellings allowed is not less than would be in conventional layout. In other words, if you have open space and it's going to deprive a developer, he can move that to a developable area and still get the number of units out of that particular piece of property. So that, I think that's important. A question that I don't see here, or an issue that I don't see here, is golf courses. I don't believe golf courses should be part of open space, because they're not really for the community's use. They're more of a public use, they're more of a business, and they use more chemicals and actually, I think, are detriment to the environment.
That's when you spray irrigation.
I'm sorry? Well, they could, but I don't think they will. So I think that's good. I think also where you have on my copy, under 115-4 definitions and word usage, item number B, it says, ponds which have a demonstrated safe recreational value and purpose and do not allow the use of motorized watercraft. But I think that ought to be pre-existing ponds. And then I think that would allow a developer, if there's a pond on the property, he can use that for open space. But they're the only ponds I would allow for open space. I would not, as Leanne said, you know, a lined pond is just definitely not open space. And I don't think a swimming pool is either, because that's not a natural amenity. What other items did I have here? I think that's really all. As you know, Randall Aaron has defined open space, and what he says is it consists of unbuildable wetlands, floodplains, and steep slopes, to which are added a part of the buildable uplands that are most sensitive environmentally, most significant historically or culturally, most scenic, or which possess unusual attributes that cause them to stand out from the rest of the property as areas that an average observer would miss most if they disappeared under new house lots and streets. And I'm reminded of that development, the retreat, that we opposed because it was going to take some woods out of the Love Creek area, and Randall Aaron said, look, you're taking away a good natural area and putting your open space where it ought not to be. Farmland that's been tilled so many times that space is not good land. So I think that's the consideration that ought to be made. And as I say, I don't want to keep repeating, but that natural area aspect
is
good.
Many times by the time it gets to us, it's already been drawn up. And we don't really have input into where the most desirable areas are.
Randall suggests that's he brings this up in this book. You have this book. I know Lawrence has it, and he talks about how
so much dust on it. I couldn't read the title.
He talks about the opportunity for that developer to come to planning and zoning and talk we do it in Lewis. I'm on the planning commission in Lewis. Developer can come to us off the record, everything, and just say, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing.
Well, the state and had here, something going on.
Well, that's the plus time. Process or whatever it is. But we do that in Lewis, and we talk to a developer, and we say, you know, we don't like this. And there may not be no ordinance that's going to do this, but it gives the sense of the community and how they feel about a given development or given plan or site. And Randall does talk about that in his book. And I really would urge you to look at that, because he does offer a system or a way to get around that. Because the developer, by the time the plat comes to you, you're right, he's done a lot of work on it, and he's going to say, well, I don't want to change that. I've already spent money on that.
But don't you think, Mike, if it was an area that he didn't have to do anything, he was going to they're going to design around it anyway? I mean, to a certain
degree. You would hope.
I would hope so. I mean, I would hope so. I think,
yeah, smart know. Design, smart development would demand that. But sometimes, as I said, with that development, the retreat, he took the land that was really not good land and made that the open space, and he sacrificed 6 acres of forest.
Maybe after January we'll start up some kind of preliminary informal part of the process, which I agree, because it's unless you actually visit the site and go out there.
Well, that's what he said.
Familiar with these things.
So what he said, the farm owner and the landowner knows that site before the developer.
But if they're selling to the developer, they got other motives. Somewhere, if the motives of the county are to protect certain things, and the motive of the developer and the guy selling the land is just to sell it and make the money, and they're not going to have the same incentive to save and protect things. So maybe there is something that you know, after the first year, we could look at and see if, you know, some informal type of process
that developers could come in and go through.
I wish I could put my fingers on that.
It would be maybe a lot helpful, and then there wouldn't be as many snags as they went through it and holdups.
Well, he calls this the, here he says this, the background stage, and he talks about wildlife, and it's in Chapter 7, Creating Open Space Designs on Four Sussex Sites. But if you want a copy, I can get you one.
Yeah. Don't waste your time.
Nope. I got it all up here.
Thanks, Finley.
Mike, was that not adopted by the Sussex Conservation District?
I don't think it was.
Right. There was something adopted about it. You're right.
Some aspects may have, but this was
rejected it, and the Conservation District endorsed it.
So, Mike,
they may have endorsed it. That's right. But I think he presented the County Council for their consideration.
I guess one of your biggest concerns is on the motorized, the stormwater management would be the safe. How do you? I can tell you that some of the things we talked about in some of it is that the stormwater management pond, what they were doing was oversizing them.
Well, that's another thing, size and scale. So
using the dirt, and this is one of the reasons that.
Also, they get more money for a waterfront lot. It added value.
That wasn't the way we looked at it. They're oversizing the ponds and using the dirt, and that's why they're doing it. And if we made them that they didn't get it, they might keep the ponds in the size they're supposed to be, you know, and that was some.
Well, I think with today's best management practices, ponds are almost a thing of the past. I mean, we had two major developments come to us in Lewis, and both of them came in with ponds, and we told them no ponds, and they said, we can do it.
Well, they can.
They can. It can be done.
We can convince the state to do it. That's the only problem. I mean, they're hung up on the ponds.
Really?
Well, no, they found that there was an economic value. Like you said, the dirt on site that they didn't have to go buy saved them a substantial amount of money.
Right. Okay.
When the site had the appropriate soils to develop with. Right. Okay. I would use it for
thank
ponds.
You, Mike. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mike.
Anyone else? Ma'am? Doesn't matter to us if you all can work it out.
We have enough problems up here. We don't need any more.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Esther Shelton, and I'm president of the Sussex League of Women Voters. I live in Lewis. And thank you for letting me speak today. League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization. We encourage informed and active participation in government, work to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influence public policy through education and advocacy. Our statements today are based on longstanding positions of the League of Women Voters of Delaware. We have studied land use issues several times over the last three decades and as the basis for these recommendations. We strongly support the regulation of growth and optimum use of land through comprehensive planning policy. Land use policies and procedures must consider the relationship of human needs, population trends, transportation planning, and ecological and socioeconomic factors. We also strongly encourage cooperation among governmental agencies. With regard to the specific issue of open space, the League supports the preservation and/or protection of critical land areas as well as coordination on all levels of government. Specifically, we urge you to recognize the importance of floodplain and erosion and sedimentation control, natural areas preservation, increased coordination in siting major facilities. Our policy urges particular concern for coastal zone planning to ensure protection of ecologically fragile estuaries and coastal areas. Accordingly, we urge you to strengthen the protection of the inland bays and other environmentally sensitive areas as recommended by the Center for the Inland Bays and others who are testifying today. Further, we urge you to let go of whatever acrimony may exist between the county and the state and give serious consideration to recommendations of the State Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. Finally, it's critical that whatever ordinance you adopt, strong enforcement provisions must be added. To address the unresolved issues raised today, we suggest that you defer action to allow amendments taking into account all the public input you're receiving today. Thank you.
Ma'am, do you realize we're suing the state right now?
Yeah.
So we
Do you want us to wait till this lawsuit's over to see who wins?
No, but I'd just like, we would like for you all, I mean, we all have to cooperate in the end, you know.
You would think.
You realize we've been trying to pass an open space ordinance since 2004? You realize
no,
that?
I
can give you a version that thick of how many copies we've got, and we have, you know.
Still?
We're still there, we're still not there, but we're getting
well,
close.
Keep trying.
Okay, thank you very much, ma'am.
Next person who would like to speak.
Carol, come on down. Good afternoon.
Hello, I'm Carol Basin from the Center for the Inland Bays. I'm the vice chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee, and I testified before the Planning and Zoning. You have the documents in your packet.
Yes,
ma'am. And I'd like to briefly go through them again. There are really only 7 points of... 7 points, but I would like to start just briefly and say thank you all for letting us have the opportunity over the last 2 years. We've been looking at the comprehensive plan and working with the council and the administration to make recommendations for change, and this open space ordinance is one that was one of our very highest priorities to preserve and protect the bays. So we really appreciate seeing this on the docket and being one of your first ordinances to come off of the comprehensive plan. This has been since July 2007. Our recommendation was to codify open space definition and categorize types of open space by habitat, quality, sensitivity, and protective value. And there was a little more than that, but also codify and enforce recommended wetland and other critical habitat removal from the density calculation. So this open space ordinance certainly begins to do that and is a good ordinance. Like Mike, we support the ordinance with a few changes that might give us further protection in the inland bays. So what I'd like to first do is run through the markup that I provided. There are really only 7 items. They're numbered. Is the Lawrence, is the copy that we gave them have the numbers?
Yes, it does.
On the page? Okay.
Yeah, it
does. So I'll run through
the only
those.
Difference, Carol, that we had to black it. They have a black and white print.
Okay, so I'll just comment on
the
which.
The color doesn't show up
just
well.
Just a little slower for us.
Would you like me to? I have copies if you want.
Yeah, give me one. If you got one color.
Mm-hmm.
The red would be better.
I knew George couldn't handle black and white.
No, I want color.
I have five.
Colorblind. That's fine.
You got
colorblind?
To them.
I'll get. You'll be here.
Thanks, girl.
My printer is being abused.
That's good.
Now, I didn't include the resource, the reference document, but I think you have that, and we can discuss that. But.
It's a big paper. You want a color one?
I don't know.
Dale, it's a lot easier to read.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
It pops out the red.
It jumps right out at you.
That's what she's hoping.
You better give me one in color. Then.
Yeah, all right. We want that bad boy jump on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
Like that better, huh?
I love that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Carol.
Okay, and there are 7, and then they are repeated. So the 7 for section 99 for subdivisions will also apply to 115, so we're only going to go through the first section 99, and then they are repeated in section 115. Okay? So number 1, in the definition of open space, we would like to include at least the word all residential subdivisions, and the reason we say that is in the zoning ordinance and subdivision ordinances, residential plan communities are often separated from general residential, medium residential, et cetera. And at the beginning of the ordinance, you cite all residential zoning districts and in residential plan communities. And so we just like to be sure that all residential development is affected by
just
this.
Just had
ordinance.
A previous hearing on a manufactured housing park. They were exempt from this. They should. That's residential housing. Do you think that should be involved in this also?
Yes.
I do too.
Yes.
In conditional uses, Lawrence, are they part of what we currently do?
They have a different open space.
We currently
space
do.
Section.
It's a different calculate. We would have to amend the mobile home park section
right.
in the ordinance.
Mobile home
right,
park.
I know that. But right now, they're not. This open space thing document we're looking at today doesn't involve conditional uses or manufactured homes.
It does not affect manufactured home parks.
Or conditional use.
Because they have their own.
Residential applications. Right?
Right.
Okay, well, it should. I mean, a conditional use residential application, it should.
Well, the mobile home parks have the required 50-foot buffer.
50-foot buffer, right.
The formula that Lawrence told you about a moment ago for open space, it's very low. It's
that could be part of.
It's 300 square feet.
That would be part of the calculation.
Per lot.
They may meet it.
No, isn't.
On the 82 lots that you considered a moment ago, that would have been 25,000 square feet of open space.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly right.
Right.
Is that addressed in on page 6 with the 115-172 planning and zoning?
It doesn't involve mobile
okay,
home
that
parks.
Doesn't. Okay.
It was proposed to, but we'd have to amend the section.
Right.
It's already been picked up. That was suggested.
Well, certainly residential plan communities and any.
Well, a residential plan community goes in residential districts, so it does affect them anyway. But that's just a,
as long as
another
they're
method
all
of development.
Impacted there as far as
I think we've got
they are
covered
major,
except for the manufactured home, which
right.
would that ordinance would have to be
conditional uses.
The conditional uses are excluded. You're overlooking it. When we do a residential conditional use, they're not involved in this open space formula, right?
It will be on if it's zone commercial, for example. Well, it's under 99. 115 says the same thing.
Right.
Let Carol go ahead, and then I'll give
you. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. When
that
she says all, if we include it all, I want to know if it is including all or if it's not including all. Right now, it doesn't.
Everything but parks.
Everything but parks, sure.
Even
okay,
conditional uses.
George, if you shut up, we'll let Carol go. Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay. Number two is to add to the definition or as protection for wetlands and waterways or as to meet federal regulations, which are most protective. For the inland bays, we felt that the definition didn't quite address the protection of wetlands, waterways, et cetera. So that is for your consideration.
Well, how would that play out in respect to the buffer regulations that the county is contesting that were recently adopted by DNREC, where their buffer regulation, their separation distance was basically 100-foot wide buffer versus the county's 50-foot. Does that mean that
wherever the most protective?
Does your suggested wording mean we would have to step up to what DNREC says they want as far as
well? It's my and my experience, let's put it that way, because I don't know the answer to your question, but in my experience between federal, state, and local law, the lower form of government, but the local form of government has the most protective ordinances and can be more protective than the state, and the state can be more protective than the federal. I believe that's usually the case, and I think that dependent upon what happens and the outcome of the process you're going through, it will make that determination very easy. It is dependent upon that outcome. I do not believe that the county will be less stringent than the state, personally. That's just from my personal experience. It may in Delaware, I'm
You're
not sure.
Probably
Sussex,
absolutely right.
Sussex County, but I think that we will be more restrictive than the state in the outcome. I think we are now in the current zoning before the PCS came through. So.
Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay because maybe that piece will obviously be dependent upon the outcome of the PCS. Okay, one of the most important things to us in the Inland Bays and protection of the Inland Bays comes back to, I think you've heard it twice, is impervious surface. We do not consider that open space. In this ordinance, active and passive and natural lands, natural open space has not been defined or separated. In my experience and other jurisdictions, active and passive recreational use is separated from open use, open space use. Since we don't have that here, I mean, that would be a major rewrite. And we at the center feel that to add a statement saying allowable impervious cover on recreational facilities in the open space shall not exceed 15% of the calculated open space will give us the opportunity to have more protective space in that recreational area. Right now, as this stands, without that, you could have let's say, in a cluster ordinance where you have 30% open space, that could all be active recreational space.
Tennis courts, swimming pools, et cetera, et cetera. Right?
And there's nothing to say that it would be...
They're worried about impervious surface more than recreational.
Right. So this would limit that, at least. And this particular one is very, very important to us. We feel this is a high priority.
By adding that percentage, it would avoid having to do a major rewrite to really separate different types of open space.
That's correct.
Right.
Well, it probably would be pretty consistent with what already happens anyway.
Right.
Actually, you know,
we'll let you get done
lower.
First, and then we'll go.
Okay.
From, okay.
Okay. Okay.
Go ahead. And then back up to Lars a little bit. And we get
On page 2, number 4, we would like to see pervious sidewalks be allowed as open space, but not impervious sidewalks. So to add the word pervious there, pervious sidewalks being something like pavers or stones or things that are more environmentally friendly, more able to filter the groundwater and surface water coming through. Number 5, we've added non-tidal wetlands as a permitted open space. And the reason being is non-tidal wetlands right now are not protected in the Sussex County Code. We hope that that'll be an ordinance coming out. But until then, right now, I believe tidal wetlands are considered unbuildable land. So therefore, the open space is calculated on the net area after tidal wetlands are removed.
That's calibration, barge density, yes.
Right.
That's not necessarily true, right, Lawrence?
Correct.
Right? I'm right?
Only place it's deducted is in a residential plan community.
Right.
Deducted by the commission on subdivisions to be kept out of property lines.
Non-tidal.
But there isn't
tidal wetlands.
Okay, there
yes.
isn't anything in our ordinance that says that they cannot be calculated for density, because we saw that happen out there near my house one day.
That's right.
Yes.
Tidal.
Right. They calculated the tidal wetlands and their density.
Non-tidal.
I'd always thought we didn't do that. Best management practice.
Non-tidal. Is that right?
No. Tidal.
He's saying tidal.
The commission in the review of the subdivision has restricted the no wetlands within any lot lines.
Right.
Doesn't change the density necessarily, especially in a cluster.
You can calculate your
open space
your tidal wetlands into density in this county. Right, Lawrence?
Except in an RPC.
Only in an RPC zone.
Okay. Let's get back.
We're talking
open space, not density. That's another fight if you want
to. No, I'm just...
Okay, I understand. Okay, go ahead, Carol.
So in order to provide an opportunity, we feel it's an opportunity to... add non-tidal wetlands to the open space permitted uses, because that would be an opportunity to preserve some more space Correct.
Okay.
Yes, it would be used in the calculation then. So maybe there would be a few more homes, but it would be a preservation measure.
Calculation of open space.
Calculation of open space.
Oh, they'll
correct.
Love to do that.
I was misquoted in the paper on
definitely
that,
do that,
by the way.
Right.
So.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, but it is in the record. So, and then you might have noticed for number 6, we have removed spray irrigation areas from the permitted uses and put it as not permitted. And the reason being is that we have no complaints or comments against spray irrigation. But spray irrigation areas, per se, just in and of themselves, are really not valuable ecological open space. They can be. They can be a forest that's being spray irrigated, and that's fine. But we feel just spray irrigation areas without qualifiers in the open space are really not valuable lands.
You got septic fields also?
We added septic fields. We mean community septic fields as open space. Because the on-site...
That's not what that means, though.
Well, we discussed with planning and zoning whether there are any still.
So you want to insert the word community there.
I would like to add community septic
thank
fields
much,
there.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And so those are the... And then number 7 on page 3 is just... to add the requirement to add the percent impervious cover within the open space to the final plat, because
15%.
That would be with the 15% approval of the 15% maximum.
that all kind of, I know you duplicate.
One tiny bit more, right.
Okay.
Yeah, everything else is duplicated in 115.
Okay.
So coming back to the letter, the cover letter, right. About the middle of the page, we're coming back to the issue of no differentiation between active and passive recreational space and conservation space. So I'd like to read to you a recommendation that we have, and hope that this would be in either taken into consideration under this ordinance process or possibly a reiteration of this in the future. We recommend a requirement that a certain percentage of total open space must be natural lands that have as their primary purpose habitat conservation. These lands may be called conservation open space or conservation lands, and we would include freshwater wetlands, natural upland forests and grasslands, water quality buffers, wildlife corridors, and certain property buffers. Recreational opportunities in agreement with the primary purpose of these lands should be encouraged. This requirement would encourage further protection of habitat, public safety, protect against additional wetland and habitat loss, and also the over-enrichment of the bays, because it would provide us with more suitable lands in open space that would filter the surface runoff, clean the groundwater, and be more protective than what is there now. Again, the 15% maximum impervious surface will help us to do that. And that is our highest priority for this recommendation. But we would certainly like to see the additional definition of active and passive recreation space and natural space in the percentages. I'll reference Mike's book, which suggests 50% natural of the open space areas, and I've looked at several ordinances, Calvert County, some others, and 50% is a recommended number. So, or that could be worked out in the future, that could be dependent on the type of development that it is, too. So it's hard to put a number to it, but we certainly are willing to work with the council to do that.
Okay,
yes, sir.
No, go ahead.
I just want to say that we... again, appreciate your time and consideration of our additions.
And just Lawrence, I'll pick on you because I sat down with Carol last week, I guess, or whatever the time is, Lawrence, and we talked about this 15%. And I know you looked, but I don't know if you found anything that we talked about the 15% and those kind of things.
I'll give you a little bit of an overview, not a whole lot.
Right, but it the 15% is not. For what we do in today's term is not out of whack. Is that correct?
It doesn't appear to be. And what I looked at three projects, and they were large, so it made it almost more difficult. I had to find in a rush trying to find some projects I could review.
Right.
Two of the projects I reviewed had major amount of trails and paths, and there was no calculation. And due to the scale, it was difficult to try to come up with what that calculation might be on the trail, so I couldn't get a good number on those. On one of the projects, it was an 89-acre track, had 13 acres of roads, which gave me a net of 76 acres. They had a pool and tennis courts, community center, et cetera. It ended up they had a passive recreation space of 21.8 acres, an active open space of 1.8 acres. In trails, they had 1.16 acres. They were only 4 feet wide. In some cases, they're 5 to 8 feet wide, so it varies. It ended up that they were at 11%, and they had substantial improvements as far as the proposed open space amenities, which included a pool and tennis, a community center, et cetera. And one thing that showed attached to the pool was appeared to be impervious, but it wasn't labeled, so I didn't calculate that. So they end up with 3.06 acres of impervious and open space, which came out to 11%.
Okay.
So that was just one example.
Right. Well, I just wanted something that's good, because I know sometimes when we throw percentages out, it's hard for us to visualize on this.
As I said, too, on the other two projects were actually two of them are across from each other, and they're new projects, or newer. They've been approved for a year or two. And they just had so many, the amount of trail, they couldn't calculate what the trail's deduction would have been, so I didn't try to after that. But the one was clear. They had already calculated everything out. It's already
trails are good, too.
So it was 11. So it's
as long as they're not sidewalks.
Less than 15. I'm sure there were some close to 15. I don't think, unless it's a really small project that created a lot of, say, a pool and a tennis court or something of that nature, on a small project could impact it 15%.
Is there unlikely that
I'd have to find a small project.
15 seems like to be a good
it
number
seems,
to start
that's right.
From.
Seems
to be
we
the
talked
average.
About it last week. Okay. I said we needed to bring in some samples of the average.
And the one thing I noted, too, if that was a condition of the ordinance, and since it's a number being 15%, there's an appeal process. They could go to the commission on a subdivision or the board of adjustment on something else.
Right.
Whereby they could apply for a variance in the percentage. So that is a number that can be calculated out into a variance process if necessary.
If they want to do the fight, right.
If they have anything a hardship.
Yeah, right.
No, thank you very much thank for you. Your time.
No, it's already in two.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Hi, my name's Deborah Schultz. I live in Lewis, and I'm a relative newcomer. We've only lived here for about 5 years.
Could you pull the speak up mic?
Just talking to one of them.
Like that?
Yeah, speak right up.
Okay, great. Okay, I want to first of all say thanks very much for the opportunity to address all of you on this issue. I think it's really important, and
it's required by law.
Well, that's nice that you're recognizing it. Okay, don't take away from my ability to give you some thanks here and a pat on the back. Okay, I know
we don't get too many of them.
Well, I know from past experience that trying to craft a quality open space ordinance is just really tough work, and you can't satisfy everyone, and it's hard. And I'm really pleased to see that you have started on this and that you've come as far as you have, and listening to the sorts of comments that are being made to you now and seeing how you're taking them seriously and trying to figure out how you would take them into account is just really heartening. I really have only a couple of things that I want to say. I have written testimony that I'll provide to you, but one of them is that the ordinance as it is now proposed, and the way the process usually works is to just look at each individual application as it comes before you. You know, you're not in advance of development. But one of the bona fide purposes of open space that you are discussing in your proposed ordinance, several of them, have to do with wildlife preservation, conservation of environmentally important land, and networking, really, in terms of, you know, passive recreation use paths, things like that. And for that to be really, really effective, it's real helpful if the county or the planning agency has some kind of idea about where those lands are in relation to the whole county. And I think that you do have some kind of overlay, or somewhere there's this idea of an overlay that you could be applying, so that when individual developer comes before you, the Planning and Zoning Commission might be able to say, or whoever does the reviewing of the plan could say, you know, this looks like a great plan and you're going to put this open space in, but here's where this open space in your particular property would best serve the purposes both of your development and of the county overall. You know, because it really would be, We live in town in Lewis, and within the years that we've lived here, they finally completed the Lewis to Rehoboth pathway, you know, and that required a lot of wheeling and dealing and giving and taking of individual owners and stuff, and it's great, and many, many people use it, and it really adds to value of the developments along it and to the people who are, you know, who come from outside to enjoy the area. And I think if we could have this idea of a county-wide greenway that sort of helped figure out where we would place these individual pieces of open space within developments, that more opportunities like that would exist and could be capitalized on, and would definitely add to the economic value of each individual development. So I have other things to say, but they're here, and there's other people here to speak. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Mrs. Schultz, we have already received two letters that was addressed to the commission.
Yeah, this is slightly.
That's fine.
Because the land trust is where it does have something that they do, and with open space and where they're.
They have a conservation loop, it's called.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, the land trust is working on that, and also the, development of the farmers ag
right.
Open space. You know,
Would require, I mean, it always requires many groups working together to have something like that. But if the county itself were the overall umbrella agency, and if it were made legislation, then there's great empowering.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I appreciate it.
My name is Ed Klinge, and I'm a part of a resident at Rehoboth Beach.
Could you spell your last name for us?
K-L-I-N-G-E.
Thank you.
And I believe you have a copy of what we submitted earlier. At least I did.
Did you submit it to planning zoning, sir?
I just sent it to the consul.
Okay.
If you don't have it, I can give you a copy.
I have it.
You have it?
Is it in our folder?
Yes. It's in that folder, yes.
It's in that folder, okay.
Ed and Joe.
Ed and Joe, so
got it.
That's my wife back
there. Joe, how you doing?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for coming over.
Okay, that's cool.
Okay, I just wanted to, just to give you a context, our daughter is a wildlife biologist in Alaska, and they have been mapping the whole infrastructure of Alaska to look at wildlife and how to preserve it and all those kinds of things. And she recently went to a conference nationally in Maryland that spoke to green infrastructure. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but it provides a lot of definitions and a lot of information that'd be useful. If I were really thinking about making a county plan, I would want to dial some of this thinking into it. But I bring that up because Joe and I are in the midst of having a lot of energy about this, speaking to our daughter and what we're trying to do to save polar bear and all those sorts of things in Alaska. Here, I think one of the reasons we're here is because we see the natural habitat and the beauty of this place as something that attracts us here. Anything that gets in the way of that, we would be detracted. So to me, anything we do with planning development and those sorts of things needs to dial that in our mind. And the more we can get an understanding of the natural patterns of animal life, nature, and those sorts of things prior to making these decisions, so that when we make those decisions, we're making them in an informed way and can do this in a continuous way that's contiguous to the wildlife and very natural beauty that exists here. So to me, I think, we feel that we need to be doing that in a way that's also economically sound. So sociologically, economically, and ecologically sound is what we're trying to get at. A lot of what Deb said is what we're recommending in the paper that we talked about, that we do have a definition of open space that clearly states that it's to be applied to all residential subdivisions,
right.
RPCs, and that other residential developments, impervious surface, should not be included in the calculations of open space acreage. Spray irrigation areas should not be included in the definition of open space. Non-tidal and intermittent wetlands should be included in the definition of open space. We believe that this is essential as one part of a larger picture, that we need to do the work to have a comprehensive picture of the county that speaks to how all this nature and what have you works in harmony with one another, so that when we put our development and develop our economic plans and those sorts of things, it all accentuates that as a whole system. And I really would encourage the council to undertake, if you don't feel you're satisfied with it, a comprehensive study that will lay this ground so that you can see the pathways of animal life and nature in a way that holds its beauty and bounty. So I thank you for hearing me. I'm a little impassioned.
What was the name of that book again? I was going to get it for...
Yes.
Mr. Cole, that way you can read it. We can catch up on
it. You'll buy it for me, I'll read it.
Is it?
Okay.
Is it?
It's green infrastructure.
Green infrastructure.
Right. And it's linking landscapes and communities is the subtitle.
Well, I think that the one thing you did bring out, and it's been brought out before, where if we have these subdivisions, and within these subdivisions there's some forested area or natural area, and they can link into the next one, it makes sense. And a lot of times we haven't. I mean, we really haven't made that a priority.
I agree with you, Mr. Cole. Just like the parking lot, so we keep them off E1.
Is there any way that this ordinance, Lawrence, there's nothing in this ordinance, right, that promotes a connectivity of development. So
the only problem I see of that is the next community might not want everybody traipsing through their mess.
That's the only
thing I can see that could be an issue. You know,
Billy, no, it's not providing that. It's just the natural areas are connected, not to be conducive to people. You know,
this gives you a technology for thinking through how the natural pathways of animal life and nature work in harmony with one another, and then a way of mapping that so that when you do development and all what have you, it links that into it.
I think we saw, Finley, if you remember, it was Arnell Creek or one of these Arnell properties out on
Old Landing Road
where they had some patches of open space, and there was a recommendation from somebody, I don't know where it came from, that they should be connected because there were like three of them, and they were really nice, but then houses and everything separated them, and I think there was a big recommendation. I don't know if we followed that recommendation and had them connected, but that was brought up at that point. So not only within a big subdivision, but adjoining subdivisions, we could see some connectivity.
The Mike Lynn project.
Was that where it was?
Yeah, it was far back.
Anyway, one of those projects, and it made sense that we could do it, not to promote people, you know, trespassing and stuff like that, but for the open space aspect of it, we should consider that. And I don't think that's in this ordinance, is it?
No.
What would it take to put something to encourage, not to require it, but to encourage it, promote it? I mean, could we make a
major amendment?
A major amendment could. Would that be a major amendment to this?
Just an
that wouldn't change the title, would it?
If it's an encouragement, it wouldn't necessarily be major.
Just to be promoting that.
Well, it would make me breathe a lot easier if I saw it in there.
We want that, definitely. Especially for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
That's your option. Huh? Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Same.
I mean, I'm just asking, Jim, would you consider the connectivity of open spaces from subdivision to subdivision, adding that somehow to this ordinance as a way, just saying it should be promoted, it should be encouraged or something?
You could probably put that in as a planning objective.
There you go. Okay, without having to rewrite anything.
Probably, right? But if there's 30 things that are going to change about it, that they'll cumulatively.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it just usually when somebody lays out their open space, the next guy could make it join up. Didn't seem too difficult.
Long time.
Thank you.
My name is Sandy Spence. I live outside Lewis. Can't afford to live in Lewis. And I did not coordinate with Ed, but I'd like to follow up on what he was talking about. My hobby is bird watching, and I'm a member of the Sussex Bird Club and the Delmarva Ornithological Society, and I've also been volunteering this past year on the first year of a 5-year breeding bird atlas that's being undertaken by the state, and they're looking for, they're trying to catalog all the birds that breed in Delaware. And so we've been out looking for them and finding evidence of breeding birds. But I'm speaking today simply as an individual who appreciates the incredible birding opportunities right here in Sussex County. I'd like to urge you to amend the proposed ordinance or the comprehensive plan itself, if that's possible, to ensure that we have open space not only in individual subdivisions, but that the county encourage and protect interconnected wildlife corridors comprised of natural areas. And I think that's basically what Ed was talking about. A wildlife corridor is a continuous thread of habitat that connects species of animals that may have been separated by roads, housing developments, or other human activities. These animal corridors are important because they allow different populations of animals to interbreed, which gives them genetic diversity. It also allows access to more areas of habitat so wildlife can follow sources of food.
Eventually, if they're not allowed to migrate, the species within an enclosed habitat will disappear. The protection of many bird species that frequent forest habitats require a continuous cover of natural vegetation. Linking natural areas allows not only birds and animals, but also native plants to spread across them, helping them to thrive, reducing localized extinctions and increasing biodiversity. And I'll give you a copy of my complete statement, but there's a study that's been done that documents all that. Now, I'm willing to recognize that a lot of people were willing to forego the benefits of protecting birds, other wildlife, native plants, and other environmental qualities to promote economic development. Therefore, I'd like to emphasize the economic impact of birding alone in this county. The Delaware Birding Trail, and that's what I handed out to all of you, it's one of many in the country and possibly the best one in the nation. It provides a map and guide to birding sites in Delaware. And you have the print version, but there's also all of that information and more is available on the internet to birders from throughout the world. The exciting part to me is that 13 of the 21 sites that are identified in that map are all in Sussex County. So I think that's really cool. The guide also points out that birding is a popular pastime in all four seasons of the year, not only in the peak summer tourist season. So it has an economic impact all year round. There is a study that's been conducted by a graduate student at the University of Delaware, which has really done a great job of documenting the significant economic impact of birding to Delaware and particularly to Sussex County. In fact, bird watching is now the largest pastime in America and the fastest growing hobby for Americans. I don't have the details of that study yet, but I'll get it as soon as it's available, I'll get it to you. But I can tell you one thing that happened last year right here. A friend of mine who's one of the most expert birders in Sussex County was out on Broadkill Road one day just watching birds from her car, and she saw this unusual bird from her car, and she found out it was a wood sandpiper. Now, a wood sandpiper is a Eurasian bird that has only ever been found in Delaware once before in recorded history. So within hours, her find was spread through the extensive network of birding enthusiasts and resulted in over 1,000 people visiting Broadkill Road in the 2 or 3 weeks that the bird stayed around. They came from as far away as California and Canada. Many stayed overnight in local hotels. They went to local restaurants. And they enjoy the social life here in Sussex after dark. I believe that the birding trail that you've seen that was introduced about a year ago will inspire more visitors to Delaware and especially to Sussex County. So, therefore, it's critical from an economic standpoint as well as an environmental standpoint that we protect the natural resources, including our habitat, our wildlife, our native plants, and our wonderful birds. For future generations, I urge you to fix the ordinance somehow, even if it's a major amendment, so that we can ensure that wildlife corridors are protected and implemented and enforced as part of the open space requirements. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have any more speakers?
Ma'am, excuse me. Could I get your name again?
Sandy Spence.
Thank you. Thank you.
She's okay, but you have to watch your host.
Hello, I'm Joanne Cabry from Rehoboth. And you have my written testimony, but I just want to make a few points. Listening today, you have an ordinance in front of you, and I think people feel it's a good start. But the terms I've heard and listened to and I've been reading about, interconnective corridors, greenways, Leanne talked about the statement investment levels. What about the very rural areas, level fours, where maybe you could have more open space? Stormwater ponds. Was it Robert Wheatley said, many of these larger ponds serve no purpose. 95% are just a big hole. So I'm saying, okay, then they should not be included. Then you hear talks about greener ways of stormwater management. There's talks about open space and impermeable surfaces. Can a development have 100% of its open space consist of sidewalks, swimming pools, and tennis courts? Could that happen? It seems like it's possible. Should there be a percentage limit? These are all questions just raised today. The whole idea of spray irrigation system, forested buffer zones, wetlands. The more I listen, the more I realize, you know, it's really a very difficult task to define open space and to write and pass an ordinance that will fulfill the terms of the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. I don't envy you your task. But I think these questions, and I have many more that were in my original written one, leads me to the conclusion that maybe we need to take more time. That I hate to say this, but maybe it's time to take a look at this ordinance, to think about all the questions, the comments that were raised today. I think this is far too important to be passed without further discussion. And I'm asking you to please consider maybe even holding additional hearings. And, well, basically, open space is a critical area of the county code. And I think it's worth the time to get it right.
Ma'am, if it's not adopted by the end of the year, there'll be new members, and we may have to bring them up to snuff. So if there's I guess if we're able, if this group is able to come up with some quick amendments that wouldn't require or changes, I guess not amendments, but changes, Jim, that we could, maybe you could give us a synopsis of what changes we could make without having to go through the hearing process. From what we've heard here, maybe you and Lawrence could get together with some of the recommendations. Some of them have been very good, and try to accommodate, like
this
I say, get something.
This is just some.
I know. I really didn't want to say, you know.
We have not got to the, you know, we're still, the same, still at the same point of where we were 7 years ago or 5 years ago.
And I, you know, we're excited about it.
We've got to put something on the book.
No, it's close. It's, yeah, it's very close.
It's close, but I just listening to, I was listening more than, you know, and
that's
I think, wow, there's
hearings.
A whole, you know, so I'm just asking you to please consider what you heard today. And
well, we still have a couple weeks.
Okay. Right? Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
The one thing, for the benefit of council and the public, the one thing the commission saw was that the present council was hoping to be able to endorse an ordinance related to open space. That's what the land use plan said. And in so doing, we got comments in writing and comments at public hearings. And they felt there was a need to make a recommendation. And they made reference to, you hear the things on TV all the time, class one or class A and then class B, where you create an ordinance that could be adopted now, and you're knowing it's going to be amended in the near future, but it'll be by a different council, so it will be different either way. So they had class one, class two, whatever, both the ordinance that we have today.
Right. Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Valerie Cloutier, and I live in the Rehoboth area. I submitted written testimony, so I'm not going to take up your time reading it, but I just want to remind you that in your comprehensive plan, you have a statement that the county should, quote, strengthen county development regulations to ensure that open space dedicated by developers contains enough contiguous legitimate open space to facilitate environmental protection and/or passive recreation. You've heard a lot of really good suggestions today, and I understand the issue about substantive amendments. But if at least you could go through this permissive planning and encourage the interconnectivity and more broad-minded thinking by developers when they're adjacent to some open space, we would begin to create these interconnected pathways and greenways. So I urge that. Also, a suggestion kind of based on Leanne Walling's green technology and picking up on Mike Tyler's statement about golf courses, they should be required to follow approved nutrient management plans. That would
I think they are, if I'm not mistaken.
If they are, then that's fine. But if they aren't, that's a way to help with more of the green technology and the nutrient runoff that's damaging the ecology of the system. I thank you very much, and look forward to seeing the final product.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
You got
Kevin?
You got Judy. Kevin and Judy. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good afternoon. I got to take Master Kramer's place. He's left on.
No, he's back there. He's in the shadows.
He's laying low back there like a dog.
Okay.
Don't say anything about him.
That's right.
I had, as well, submitted to you written documentation. I just wanted to go over them so you made sure you understood what my little short abbreviations meant.
All right.
I only got part of it, Kevin, but that's it.
Just one page, right, Kevin?
No, sir. I took the existing ordinance and added red line, blue line.
I think
I got one page.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
I
got two. I think of.
Unless this other stuff goes with it.
I got it.
You got it?
Got all of it.
Okay. It basically, in the open space, Mr. Cole, you can follow along and kind of circle if you'd like, because I know it's getting late in the day. Under open space, it presently reads...
What page are you on, Kevin?
99-5, it's the first page.
Okay.
These lands within residential subdivision for developments which have a bona fide purpose to provide active and or passive recreational opportunities, maintain land in a predominantly undeveloped, and I'm asking for the words harvesting agricultural state be added, or a natural state. And that means that if you have a piece of open ground that you would be able to till it. Without that, believe it or not, the way the definition is set up, that would not be considered open space if it was, in fact, a farming area or agricultural area within residential developments. Those are becoming more prominent. As an amenity and as open spaces throughout the country to provide garden zones for people to be able to plant. Further down in the definitions under letter B, it presently reads ponds which have a demonstrated safe recreational value and purpose, and I had suggested we strike end the words and do not allow the use of motorized watercraft, because I don't necessarily see us putting a bunch of jet skis in 2 and 3 acre ponds, and that's what would happen, I believe. If I have a 2 acre pond or a stormwater management pond, if I put a jet ski ramp in, automatically that pond becomes eligible for open space. Under the rest of your definitions, it says the following uses are not permitted. Item A says land areas included within, and it presently reads designated lot lines. Here we get into a geometry problem. Inasmuch as at some end of a development, we are going to have the open space, or could have open space. If I can't have a lot line closing it in or going through it, that means all of the ground contained within that geometry, rectangle, whatever, would not be considered open space, and I don't think that's the intent of what you're trying to do.
You understand that?
So, by adding the following words, I think we can solve that, and that is land area included within, and add the word residential designated lot lines within a subdivision or development.
So you're saying add the word residential in there to...
Add the word residential before designated lot lines, and then after the word lot lines, add within a subdivision or development. And again, it's just a geometry problem. We got to have something to end the box. And if we can't run a lot line through a open space for the open space to be considered, then I can't have the outermost boundaries of a geographic form.
So would designated residential lot lines would satisfy your
question? If it designated residential lot lines, that would satisfy it, yes.
Okay. I think I got it. It just clarifies.
Under building footprints, again, I've asked, following the word building footprints, that we add the word, unless the structure is designated predominantly for recreational activities. You could have an area, very easily, we have many of them in our developments that have open space, where we have either a pavilion, which has a building footprint. And what you're saying is that the area contained within that pavilion is no longer considered part of the open space. And that's not necessarily true. That is part of the open space. It's part of the...
It's within the open
space. It's within the open space, but you're now asking for developers to generate and calculate all of that prior to our preliminary plan submission to you. And it's going to create a real turmoil, and I'm not so sure the amount of square footage we're looking at...
Is significant.
Is significant.
Right. Well, okay.
Okay.
You might have a point there.
Again, the predominant impervious surfaces, such as streets, again, the intent of... what this ordinance is, or this section is doing, letter C. However, I would ask, again, for the same generic reasons of having to recalculate everything over and over again, that at the end of that we add, unless the main purpose is for servicing a recreational amenity. In other words, many times now in the preliminary site plans, we'll show an area, call it a open space that has a recreational building in it. You're now saying, okay, we got to calculate all of the parking lot areas, and they don't count as part of open space. Also, Mr. Johnson on planning and zoning likes to see parking spaces near his open space areas as part of the open space, so people don't have to walk more than a half a mile to get to the open space and have a place to park.
If they
now telling me not to include those parking spaces.
Earlier, we heard a suggestion that we separate types of open space. Possibly, because what you're asking for, if we did ever get to that point where we separated it or had two different definitions within a definition or whatever.
That would be correct.
You could say that the active open space, this stuff is permitted. And,
correct.
And, okay. I mean, yes. But just, to, yeah, there may be a problem with just...
Well, as Mr.
In the way it's written, it might be too...
Well, I believe what Mr. Lank has said earlier is that everybody on the Planning and Zoning Commission recognizes this is version 1.0, and there's going to be a version 2.0. I think the changes that I have recommended make sense to allow version 1.0 to go forward with the intents that you have, and that can be tightened up during version 2.0 by splitting active versus passive and those type items.
Mm-hmm. No, I see where you're going. So, yeah.
Again, the stormwater management facility areas... I've asked at the end of that because, as you have heard time and time again, you know, what defines stormwater management facility? What does that mean? It means a zillion things to a bunch of different people. As late as yesterday, this is a document which was just released from DENREC on the new stormwater management regulations that they're wanting. And in order to make a development basically approvable in their eyes in the future, is that if it rains a one-year storm, no water leaves the site at all. Mm-hmm. Okay? In order to do that, they're actually saying depress big grassed areas, play fields, depress those and let the water go into those and drain from the one-year storm. However, your regulation would now say that that play field, because it is utilized 2% of the time as an infiltration area for a one-year storm, that it doesn't count as open space. And I think that's wrong. I don't think that's your intent. I may be wrong, but I don't think that was your intent.
Well, yeah, I don't know if we'd ever designate that depressed area as a part of the stormwater management. It just may
be. But as soon as I have to show it to DENREC in order to come back here, it does classify itself as a stormwater management area.
Okay.
And according to their new regulations, that's what I'm going to have to do.
Okay.
However, I think I've come up with a way around that for version 1.0. And that is by adding, where it says stormwater management facility areas, put in the words that do not support aquatic life or natural habitat plants during a typical year-long season. Mm-hmm. If it does both of those, then it should be allowed as part of the open space. Under the utility facilities, again, differing of opinions, I believe we're ahead of the word lagoons, it should say primary or secondary. I think you're going to see a lot of lagoons come down the road for stormwater and for wastewater, storage of clean water that will have some recreational value to them. Actually, could be stocked with fish, but because they are, again, tied in to a loop series of either stormwater management or wastewater, I'm afraid they would be exiled as not being open space. If, again, go into 9926, we talk about, it's a repeat of the parking lots, and again, I put except after it's is always used for vehicle access, I put in parentheses, except those utilized for recreational amenities. Again, it's a carryover from the previous section. Under 9932, under paragraph C, I have asked that in bonds posted to ensure the completion of, and I've asked to install the word construction before requirement. There has been discussions, and there are other ordinances that are floating around where you're talking about maintenance bonds and bonds for this and bonds for that. It's my understanding from kind of reading this and listening to you all, your intention was the original construction and not for Mr. Lank to hold the maintenance bonds forever and a day on the project, which is without that word of construction installed, he would be the man that would hold them forever.
What about just surface improvements? Because we may have the developer be required to install landscaping. Wouldn't we want that bonded?
You would, sir, but I believe that's under a construction requirement for the initial installation of it. But in some of your buffer ordinances, it then talks about a separate bond being issued for the maintenance of that buffer strip. And I believe, at least from what I can determine from those discussions, you didn't want Mr. Lank to have to be the keeper of bonds on buffer strip maintenance forever and a day.
Right.
That was the only reason I suggested that
installation. Well, we just wondered if something happened that the development was covered.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
That's the intent of this right here, Dalton.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. Again, during section 115.4, the definitions repeat just as they did previously. And last but not least was on 115-172, special requirements. I am glad Planning and Zoning did take my recommendation and recommend that to you, that you strike that last line that says the landscape buffer strip shall not be treated as part of open space, as that is a discriminatory statement, discriminating between what a mobile home park is versus every other type of development that's out there. And I don't believe
that.
That's your case. I would ask you to consider one other item. There's been testimony earlier today regarding discussing perhaps adding in non-tidal wetlands. I would ask under version 1.0 that you leave non-tidal wetlands out of the ordinance completely. The reason I would request that is several fold. One, currently the county in the planning and zoning section does not have a definition of non-tidal wetlands. Secondly, throughout the state, there are multiple definitions of non-tidal wetlands that are being challenged as to what really makes something a non-tidal wetland.
Are challenged at the state level or the federal level?
They're being challenged at the state level and at the federal level.
But what does the state do to protect tidal wetlands? I mean, non-tidal.
Well, the argument really comes...
You're talking 404s.
No, I'm talking non-titles, isolated non-titles and non-titles of all sorts.
Forested wetlands.
Aren't they the 404
wetlands?
Freshwater. What they refer to, the
404s or something,
right.
Yes.
That's what the Army Corps refers to as non-tidal wetlands.
Yes.
Now, when we send out, or you send out those people to get a survey, a parcel of ground, mm-hmm. and to stake out the non-tidal wetlands,
mm-hmm.
what are you saying? There's how many definitions? I mean, aren't they all following this?
There are numerous interpretations.
But the Army Corps has...
Well, except the Army Corps no longer does a delineation. That's the lowest of their priorities. And
they
so
don't do
the
them, I know, but they over when you have a delineation done...
Yes, sir.
...who checks it?
Well, if there is a permit involved, the Army Corps will check it.
Okay.
If it is just a delineation standing by its own, we have been advised by the Army Corps that I will probably die of an old man before they ever get around to even looking at them.
Right, but they have some generalized maps that they use, right? They sometimes...
No, sir.
No? They don't
no,
even...
I mean, they've got stuff drawn, but I can take them a site-specific one where we have had a certified environmental scientist walk the property and flag the site, and we've
right.
surveyed them in.
Okay, as long as it's stamped by some certified, they accept them, right, is what you're saying.
And what they're saying is, okay, that's a certified person stamping it, but the Corps' not standing behind it, even though it's a certified person stamping
okay.
it. My question and concern for the council, Mr. Cole, was this. If I take a certified soil scientist out there and the council has no definition anywhere in its planning and zoning or subdivision ordinances on non-tidal, what makes a non-tidal wetland a non-tidal wetland, who do I bring it to and who has the right of approval or denial?
But the people who are doing this, these surveys for these non-tidal wetlands.
Yes, sir.
They're using some criteria.
Yes,
they
sir.
Should be all using the same criteria. Are they not? I would think they would be.
They are using the criteria. However, part of that criteria is an interpretation.
Well, I'm sure of that. But I'm saying they do. There is some criteria that they're following.
Yes.
Okay, right. I mean, why wouldn't we just then adopt that criteria or something? I mean, or why do we have to do it at all if they are doing it? I mean, they pretty much are doing it. I'm just curious.
Well, I don't.
It just seems like you're getting, it may be making it, because you were sounding like a professor here, professor, with, you know, all these 101s and whatever. Anyway.
No, sir. The
at
only
this
thing
point,
I'm
I think you might be getting it too difficult. I mean, we want to keep it simple, and I would say why would we want to try to, look how hard it is to create this definition, why would we try to create that definition when they're already using a definition out there
Cole,
in the field?
I think you took what I said wrong, and let me repeat what I said. What I said was, recognizing I believe this is going to be version 1.0,
right.
In this version, I would not try to address non-tidal wetlands.
I don't know why not.
Well, Mr. Cole, the very
no,
next...
I heard your explanation, but
well,
I...
The next question I would have is, please define to me somewhere in state or county code presently where non-tidal wetlands exist.
It's not defined.
Oh, I know that. I know it's not defined, but there is a definition out there at the federal level,
okay.
And people going out there doing these delineations...
I agree.
...are using... We would use that criteria no matter what. We would just adopt it. We wouldn't come up with something new because it wouldn't...
Okay.
Ours wouldn't override the federal level.
Okay.
Right. So, why, yeah, we, I mean...
But in version 1.0, to be able to get something passed within the next 3 weeks, you're not going to be able to go back to all the other county codes and put a definition in a non-title.
I don't know. This, okay. I don't know if we'd
this
have
ordinance
to,
does
okay.
not
it's
have a definition of non-title.
Okay, I understand that. I understand. But okay. I don't know if we really need to do that. Okay.
Okay.
The only thing the ordinance requires is that the location of all wetland, both state and federal,
right.
be indicated and to be in order of compliance with both those laws.
Right. Well, that's sufficient to me.
Very good. That's fine.
Professor.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Professor.
Y'all have a good day.
Email or a copy?
Certainly will.
Thank you. Put those red lines on
Lawrence,
the dashboard.
Lawrence, do you have a copy of Kevin's remarks?
No, I do not.
Kevin, I don't have a copy either.
I got a copy of it.
Right here.
He only copies Dale.
Mine's complete copy.
Got it red?
I only
is it
got
in
one
colors?
Copy.
I will copy all of you.
Thank you.
I've already got mine.
That's all right. We're going to make copies.
We're good. Don't waste your breath there, Kevin. We got it.
Yes, ma'am.
We're
go
under
ahead.
Control. Feel sorry for me.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
My name's Mary Dean, and I'm a recent resident, maybe in the past 5 years.
You stand a little closer to the mic. We're having trouble hearing you.
All right. I reside about half of the year in Milford in Sussex County and about half of the year in Bethany Beach.
Which do you like better?
Well, they both have their distinctive charms. Yes,
good answer.
Good answer.
I do not have a written submission that I've supplied. I'm a retired attorney and a retired law professor, and I didn't work in this particular area, but I worked in doing a lot of legislation and drafting regulations, and I just had a few comments to make about Mr. Is it Boulay's comments?
Burnett? Or get just
Burnett?
The
was
the
it?
Kevin Burnett.
Okay, Burnett?
The gentleman that just left.
Okay.
Burnett.
Is it Burnett? Okay.
U-R-D-E-T-T-E.
T-T-E. Okay, and that was just a couple of real short points. One, he was talking about inserting a natural or agricultural into the open space, and I had some concern with that as to runoff. In terms of one of the considerations in open space is often runoff of fertilizer and nitrates, et cetera. If you were to consider doing that, he did mention like small gardens, and if that was the intent of that, then if you're going to insert agriculture, you might want to narrow down the definition in terms of how much space. If it would leave a huge field to be tilled in an area, then that's not really open space.
Don't plant corn by the road, that's just my purpose.
Yeah, then we could make a limitation. A limitation might be a good idea.
Okay.
And then the other concern I had was the insertion of unless something is designated as recreational, and this seemed to be able to include some building structures. He gave as an example a pavilion. However, that language would allow perhaps like structures around a swimming pool or maybe even arguably the swimming pool itself or tennis courts, et cetera. And I think the discussion earlier about differentiating between active and passive and natural might take care of this problem rather than putting in a dangerous loophole there of inserting the word recreational. And then my last comment has to do with excluding the word non-titled wetlands, taking that out completely, and the discussion about what a definition would be. And I think the definition, and this is from like a legislative construction, is if the county has a definition for its purposes of tidal wetlands, then a non-tidal wetland would be anything that's not within that definition. So I think you don't really need to have a separate definition in it. And for the reasons that were already explained here, I think it's a non-tidal wetlands should be included. And those are my comments.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Ma'am.
How are you doing? Good afternoon.
Doing fine. My name is Judy Dean. I reside in Georgetown, and I'm here on behalf of the Sussex County Association of Realtors. And since it's been a long day, I hope this doesn't take very long.
Oh, we got plenty of time. We got another ordinance after this one, so it's no big deal.
Oh, okay.
Take your time.
We just have some comments about the ordinance, and one is about the existing standards for open space. In reviewing the comprehensive land use plan, it discusses adopting zoning and code amendment for larger residential projects, but we notice that the ordinance is not limited to the larger residential projects. It seems to include every size of residential project, including individual lots, possibly, or it could be construed that way. And it does not appear to adhere to the spirit of the provisions of the comprehensive land use plan. Under open space, this ordinance doesn't include standards for how much open space. I have heard you talk about 30%, 15% and all, but we don't know how much is required or if you have any standards for how much will be required.
I think that's already written within the subdivision right now, if I'm not mistaken.
It's written elsewhere in the code. And it's different in different areas. So we don't have a flat number like 50%, like I think Jim...
Okay.
So Mike was talking about with his, you got to search out to find it, what it is.
Okay, well, it's better to have that discussion now. Another issue is on page 6, and I haven't heard this discussed today, but there is a special requirement for mobile home parks.
Right.
That there is a requirement for a 50-foot strip buffer around the park that has no streets or buildings and cannot be included in open space.
It's already existing.
That's already in our ordinance.
Is it?
Been that way for
already in the record.
30 years. Like that.
Already
we're going to have to take, that's going to have to be deleted out of this.
The only thing proposed in that section was to add the words, the landscape buffer strip shall not be treated as part of the open space as defined by 115-4.
Okay.
The other part's already existing.
Already does. Forever.
Since the 70s. Yeah,
forever.
Okay. On page 4, bonds and guarantees.
Page 4?
Mm-hmm.
Under bonding?
Bonds and guarantees.
Okay.
Again, the way it's that first underlined part, it implies that there's a process to determine if it qualifies as open space. We could find no reference in the comprehensive land use plan or this ordinance as to the process to approve open space. So, you know, it may not make or break a deal or a decision, but is there a process? I guess it's our question.
I guess the process is what we have now for amenities and those kind of things. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I mean, I'm not.
That's fine.
I just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah, they're not changing anything as we currently operate.
It's just that.
Is that good?
I have to.
Honey, I don't know. That's a different. It's another argument for another day.
That just provides that. So we've discussed this for a year or so. There's been no guarantee to protect the property owners as they purchase lots in a development that amenities or the buffer strips or whatever are going to be protected. So the bonding method will help protect it.
Okay. And many times they were going to plant a bunch of erode trees and then 90% of them die and then nobody ever comes back and replants them. So this way we maybe will get some, satisfaction.
That's in the forest buffer. Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Judy.
Okay. On page two.
Page two.
Under the definition of open space, A, where you say land area within designated lot lines, that wasn't really very clear.
Mr. Burdett suggests we add the word residential in front of lot lines so it's more specific that the lot lines don't become part of the open space. The lots don't calculate.
Okay. Under C, it excludes impervious surfaces, but on A on page 1 above, that includes sidewalks, existing standards for open pools, game courts, et cetera, and, which are impervious and considered part of open space. So it seems a little strange there.
Okay.
D, stormwater management.
Right.
It excluded for open space, but in some instances, many, this could be used for recreational areas. There are developments where I heard someone say it's waterfront property. That's how they're being sold, and that's what people like. They like that large stormwater management pond because they have a nice view. They get the ducks. They can have a picnic on the side, whatever.
I think there is some concern with council on that, how to quite handle it.
Well, he talks here, I think, even again, Mr. Burdett brought up that the distinction should be maybe that some stormwater management facilities do not support aquatic life, some do. Mm-hmm. The larger ones do, therefore they become an asset,
exactly,
to the community. They get higher prices for, a lot sitting on a lake.
A water feature.
Well, it's a lake instead of a stormwater retention pond. They call it lake sunset.
We want them to fluff it. We don't want a dry hole sticking out.
It becomes an amenity.
Right.
Collecting trash.
So there's a difference when they go from being just stormwater management facility and an amenity. And that's when maybe this aquatic life determination.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
And it's a thought.
And, again, going with that, if you can do some of the amenities, you get more of a green technology and a natural landscape feature. And on page 1B, why do ponds have demonstrated recreational value and purpose and not D on page 2?
And not be on page 2?
And not D on page 2, which would be your...
Oh, okay. Why stormwater management, why pond? Mm-hmm. I don't think you were here when I explained it, but, it's because they oversize them.
I heard that.
Dirt. Okay, did you hear that? That's,
yeah.
That was some of the theory behind it, okay?
Okay.
But I understand what you're saying.
But I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone else? Anyone else want to be heard on this?
Going once, twice. That gavel.
Let the Mike, were you here to speak on this?
Everybody cool? Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's right.
No. Mike, no, please. Okay.
Sorry.
No.
We will. Do you want to close the record or want to leave the record open?
Can I ask just one question?
Okay.
The question is, when you get a plan, right, a comprehensive plan, do you look at it as something that's going to be upgraded through time as you learn more about nature?
Definitely. And all that kind
of comprehensive plan is required to be updated at least every 5 years.
Once every 5 years.
It can be updated sooner if they want to.
We just did that, went through that process.
Evolution.
Took us six and a half years, but we got to do it.
Next year, when you
but it never got much, not much was changed.
You do it next year.
There's no guarantee.
All right, folks. Since
we don't get change in Washington. We don't get change in Stewart.
Let's I think and I have to agree with George, even though it saddens me, that we closed because we have all the comments, I assume. Lawrence and you, because I don't think we're going to make a decision with all the comments today. There's some of these things that are very good ideas that I think we can incorporate within the ordinance without being the legal thing.
How would Lawrence and I go about putting all these things in unless you tell us which ones you want because
Jim, my concern was
a major sifting job.
Which ones could we put in without having to re-advertise? In other words, if you could determine, maybe Lawrence could go through a list of things that were suggested today, and you could look at them and say,
you got 31 pages of suggested comments here.
Well, I think Lawrence can take out a lot of them. He's done this before, but I can condense it down to a small number that would be... that I think got our attention on this thing, and maybe were, you know, legitimate good reasons to change things. But I think he could give you a list, and you could say, this would be too much of a change, this wouldn't, we could do that anyway. And then we would know better if it's possible to do something.
Lawrence, do you have a clear view of what the council may be wanting to put into the ordinance out of the comments that came out of today?
Jared. We can work out something. I can't guarantee I get it all.
Him, Robinson.
Do your best. Like to say, we'll give it a good shot.
What Kevin had a better name for it than I did.
Workshop.
Yeah, maybe we could just
part one, part two.
Meet with Jim and try to come up with what we think you might.
Yeah, we'll have to sit down, look at.
Interested in running by you, send it out in the packet, maybe, or email it to you.
And try to get it. Yeah, and see if we can get something done by the end of the year. If not, I guess we'll just have to move on with.
Then we're all right to close the public record today. Correct? Gentlemen, am I okay to close the record today?
Yes, sir, you are.
Yes, I believe so.
Record on the hearing is closed. The council will do follow-up. They'll basically have to identify what they want to change, and then cumulatively, I have to look at all those to see if it represents such a major change as to require us to go back to a new public hearing, or if it doesn't, whether they can be massaged in to the ordinance that's been
I'm going to make it a little easier for you. I think anything that is a change in your opinion that is going to have this go back to a public hearing.
Leave it out.
Leave it out of this version.
Absolutely.
And then version two.
Okay. That might shorten some of the list for that. Okay.
Well, I mean, ordinances are living documents. They often get amended later.
So. Well, I think as most people said, that this is the if we can get this one off the paper and in the books, for lack of better words, this is the first part, because we've been trying to get that for 6 years. So I mean, we need to get started. We got to start somewhere, and we got to get it on the books, and then we can go for the next version. Okay, thank you, Jim.
We have one more hearing.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate your time.
I second that motion, Lynn. 2 minutes.
Right. Two minute recess. Right.
Yeah. Republicans are walking.
Got your name on your book, so I'll get it back to you.
Is that all right? If that's right.
Lack of a quorum. I'll bet. There you go. Thank you.
Well, I'll call you. You can pick it up so it's safer that way.
Okay.
I got your address in one of your letters.
Kevin. Thank goodness, Mike.
Goddamn.
You're going to be glad to get rid of me.
Well, sometimes the council, like I said, we're going 1A, we might end up at 1B, and then at that time they might create a committee to look at it before they go to council.
Well, even though I think even though we have
this with you guys, it's okay. I don't know why.
I should have sent it to you.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll take
it.
Right.
Lawrence, who knows the laws, can say,
yeah.
I will email it post-haste.
I think that, well, they have the TAC. They don't have the TAC committee now.
From Bridgeville?
They could be spun off to a certain degree.
But if we don't get something adopted